At this, Coach Pete looked confused. He clearly didn't like feeling that way, which seemed a shame, since I suspected he spent a lot of time doing it. Irwin's eyes widened, and he darted a quick look at me. His mouth twitched, but the kid kept himself from smiling or laughing, which was fairly impressive in a boy his age. Coach Pete glowered at me, pointed a finger as if it might have been a gun, and said, "You, tend to your own business." I held up both hands in a gesture of mild acceptance. I rolled my eyes as soon as Coach Pete turned his back, drawing another quiver of restraint from Irwin. "Pick this up," Coach Pete said to Irwin and gestured at the spilled lunch on the floor. Then he turned and stomped away, taking Irwin's paperback with him. The two kids, who had been giving Irwin grief, made their way back to their original seats, meanwhile, and were at the far end of the table, looking smug. I pushed my lunch away and got up from the table. I went over to Irwin's side and knelt down to help him clean up his mess. I picked up the tray, slid it to a point between us, and said, "Just stack it up here." Irwin gave me a quick, shy glance from beneath his mussed hair and started plucking up fallen bits of lunch. His hands were almost comically large compared to the rest of him, but his fingers were quick and dexterous. After a few seconds, he asked, "You've read The Hitchhiker's Guide?" 42 times, I said. He smiled and then ducked his head again. "No one else here likes it." "Well, it's not for everyone, is it?" I asked. "Personally, I've always wondered if Adams might not be a front man for a particularly talented dolphin, which I think would make the book loads funnier." Irwin let out a quick bark of laughter and then hunched his shoulders and kept cleaning up. His shoulders shook. "Those two boys give you trouble a lot?" I asked. Irwin's hands stopped moving for a second. Then he started up again. "What do you mean?" "I mean, I've been you before," I said. The kid who liked reading books about aliens and goblins and knights and explorers at lunch and in class and during recess. I didn't care much about sports, and I got picked on a lot.
"They don't pick on me," Irwin said quickly. "It's just what guys do. They give me a hard time. It's in fun."
"And it doesn't make you angry," I said. "Not even a little." His hands slowed down, and his face turned thoughtful.
"Sometimes," he said quietly, "when they spoil my broccoli."
I blinked. "Broccoli?"
"I love broccoli," Irwin said, looking up at me, his expression serious.
"Kid," I said, smiling, "no one loves broccoli. No one even likes broccoli. All the grown-ups just agree to lie about it so we can make kids eat it, in vengeance for what our parents did to us."
"Well, I love broccoli," Irwin said, his jaw set.
"Huh," I said. "Guess I've seen something new today." We finished, and I said, "Go get some more lunch. I'll take care of this."
"Thank you," he said soberly. Norm.
I grunted, nodded to him, tossed the dropped food, and returned the tray. Then I sat down at the corner table with my lunch and watched Irwin and his tormentors from the corner of my eye. The two bullies never took their eyes off Irwin, even while talking and joking with their group. I recognized that behavior, though I'd never seen it in a child before, only in hunting cats, vampires, and sundry monsters. The two kids were predators. Young and inexperienced, maybe, but predators. For the first time, I thought that Bigfoot Irwin might be in real trouble. I went back to my own tray and wolfed down the food on it. I wanted to keep a closer eye on Irwin. Being a wizard is all about being prepared. Well, that and magic, obviously. While I could do a few things in a hurry, most magic takes long moments or hours to arrange, and that means you have to know what's coming. I'd brought a few things with me, but I needed more information before I could act decisively on the kid's behalf. I kept track of Irwin before he left the cafeteria. It wasn't hard. His face was down, his eyes on his book,
and even though he was one of the younger kids in the school, he stood out, tall and gangly. I contrived to go past his classroom several times in the next hour. It was trig, which I knew, except I'd been doing it in high school. Irwin was the youngest kid in the class. He was also evidently the smartest. He never looked up from his book. Several times the teacher tried to catch him out, asking him questions. Irwin put his finger on the place in his book, glanced up at the blackboard, and answered them with barely a pause. I found myself grinning. Next, I tracked down Irwin's tormentors. They weren't hard to find either, since they both sat in the chairs closest to the exit, as though they couldn't wait to go off and be delinquent the instant school was out. They sat in class with impatient, sullen expressions. They looked like they were in the grip of agonizing boredom, but they didn't seem to be preparing to murder a teacher or anything. I had a hunch that something about Irwin was drawing a predatory reaction from those two kids, and Coach Vogan had arrived on the scene pretty damned quickly. Too much so for coincidence, maybe. Maybe Bigfoot Irwin isn't the only scion at this school, I muttered to myself. And maybe I wasn't the only one looking out for the interests of a child born with one foot in this world and one in another.